On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The people have spoken, and it's house cleaning time in Washington, D.C. Just 2 years after a newly reelected President Bush trumpeted his political capital and Karl Rove dreamed of a permanent majority for the GOP, the Democrats have retaken the House and made a mighty run, outcome still unclear, for the Senate majority. It is the biggest defeat of George W. Bush's presidency, forged in voter unhappiness over war and corruption. The Republican Revolution of 1994 has folded its tent. Democrats are back from the wilderness, but with more moderate new winners headed for Congress. Up next on Point, the message from the voters in the game-changing midterms of 2006. We dive in with two great veterans and observers of the political realm. Joining me from Washington is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time magazine. Karen, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
And with me in the studio, the wise eyes of David Gergen, White House advisor to four presidents, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton, editor-at-large at U.S. News and World Report, author of Eyewitness to Power, now director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. David Gergen, great to have you.
Good to be with you, Tom, and with Karen.
Karen, let's go to you first. I mean, what do we see in this big turnout? What's the big message here?
Well, I think that the big message, there are so many big messages, but one of them is that this strategy that both parties have had in recent cycles of really kind of digging into your own base, into your own supporters, and turning them out, I think failed this time around, and it's the Republicans paid the price. These races were won virtually across the country in all sorts of districts, not just the ones where, you know, some endangered Republican moderates held on, and some conservative Republicans got beaten. So I think that what it's going to do is have both sides really rethinking their strategy.
David Gergen, how do you read the big billboard here?
The big billboard to me goes back to the fundamentals of democracy. The voters in this country send people to Washington with trust. They trust them to serve the country well. And if you go to Washington and abuse your power, if you go to Washington and mismanage the government, if you go and get us into a war in an incompetent fashion, the voters will punish you. There is a sense of accountability in this election. It was a protest election against the way the government has been run by a Republican-dominated Washington, and the Republicans have now paid the price. I think had Democrats done the same thing, there would have been the same punishment. I think it's healthy for democracy when people are held accountable for their mistakes and their mismanagement.
Karen Tumulty began to look out across the country with us at particular results and the patterns you see. Do you see the protest vote here, the accountability moment for Republicans, and how has it shown up in results?
Well, I think we do see that, and because even a lot of incumbents who won last night won with far smaller margins than they are accustomed to, and you know, sort of shoring up David's point is the fact that, you know, we all expected the Iraq war to dominate the election, and sure enough, you know, in the exit polls, at least two-thirds of voters cited that as one of the reasons that they were voting the way they were, and these almost all broke Democratic. But three-quarters of voters said that it was corruption and scandal as well that was on their minds as they went into the polls. And I do think that this does suggest an accountability moment. The big question now, I think, for the Democrats, whether they're running one house or two, is going to be what message they take from this. I mean, are these next 2 years just going to be all about payback and gearing up for a 2008 presidential election, or are they going to sort of turn their focus to getting a few things done? And also, I think we're all going to be watching the president very, very closely at this 1 p.m. Eastern news conference today to see what kind of message he took out of the election.
David Gergen, you say Republicans paying a price here for what unfolded in Washington in the last few years. Now, the Democrats have something to learn from this as well. I mean, they've won a lot, much more than the 15 they needed in the House. We'll still see what happens in the Senate. But how do you read the Democrats reading this? Some more moderate faces coming to Washington in what will be a freshman crew.
There are more moderate faces coming to Washington, and great credit needs to go to both Rahm Emanuel and Chuck Schumer, who were the two masterminds in the House and Senate for the Democrats in recruiting candidates. Mm. They did a very skillful job of that, and I think that does help to account for the victory. It is that very centrist message. I think the country in this election brought the conservative dominance of our nation to an end. It opened a new chapter, but it's not a liberal chapter. It is rather, I think, we want to turn to a more sensible center. And I think that's the message the Democrats ought to pick up from it. It does strike me that Nancy Pelosi, in her early comments, and along with Rahm Emanuel's last night, very much understood that message. They did not promise a crusading effort to change everything in a dramatically liberal way. Instead, they promised to bring bipartisanship and integrity to government and to work with the president. They held out the hand last night to the president. Karen is right. Let's see if the president takes that hand and works with them, or in fact, it remains as defiant on Iraq as he was before the elections.
President Bush, Karen Timothy, already spoken with Nancy Pelosi, saying that they were told, the report is, they pledged to work together. Do you see that happening? If there's a sensible center emerging here as the potent center of this election, do you see both parties ready to run that way? Or will the 08 presidential election begin the polarization dynamic all over again right away?
Well, there is certainly that danger. I mean, in many ways, the 08 presidential race begins today. But I do think that it is in the interest of both parties to show that they are capable of getting some things done. Some relatively non-controversial things like raising the minimum wage are going to pass pretty quickly. And the real test will be a little bit further down the road, looking at some bigger and more complicated things, some very big problems on the horizon. For instance, you're hearing, believe it or not, talk again about entitlement reform in Washington.
Social Security, Medicare, and so on.
That's right. I mean, not the plan that the president put out a couple of years ago, not individual accounts, but some kind of grand fix to the looming crises that these funds are all facing.
This is a good thing, right? I mean, these are not fake crises. They're for real.
Exactly. And so I think that's the kind of thing where you're going to see the real test.
Yeah, let me say, add to that, I think Karen's right. And two other issues where we could have real progress before all the food fights start, as they will, within a matter of months, if not weeks. One of them is immigration, where the House Republicans were blocking a comprehensive bipartisan immigration bill that the president and Ted Kennedy and John McCain were all supporting a comprehensive approach.
So the Democrats may line up with President Bush.
Now I think the Democrats in the House will get that bill passed. Secondly, John McCain and Joe Lieberman have been sponsoring a bill on climate change, a so-called cap and trade bill. I think that bill's got a much better chance to pass. But before they get to any of that, it does seem to me there is a huge test just over the horizon, and it's going to suck everything out of the environment until we resolve it, and that's Iraq. And on that one, I still don't see the evidence, even when they pledge that they're going to work together, that they can work out a compromise. The president is still pledged to victory. There are many Democrats who privately believe victory may be too elusive. It may not be winnable in Iraq.
Many Republicans for that matter.
And many Republicans have come to that view. And Karen, I don't know how you see that one unfolding, but it does strike me that that's going to be likely to be very contentious. The vice president is going to fight like the devil not to change strategy. And John McCain last night was saying we must have a strategy to prevail. Where do you see that going, Karen?
Karen?
You know, that is a good question. And, of course, the other thing you're going to hear a lot of immediately are calls for the resignation of Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if the president, as he digs in on that, that is quite possibly going to, you know,
it's a big signal right there.
Exactly, exactly. But what we have now in at least one House controlling Congress, and also what I think we're likely to hear out of some of the key committee chairmen, even if the Republicans hold the Senate, people like Richard Lugar and John Warner, chairman of Foreign Relations and Armed Services, putting pressure on the White House to change its course. We have Jim Baker coming in with his Iraq report fairly soon. There are going to be a number of pressure points in the next few months. And how the president responds to this, I have not got a clue.
Karen, what about on the Senate front? It may be days, we're now told, if recounts kick in here in Virginia and Montana. How much does it matter to the Democrats whether they have gained a majority in one House or both?
It matters a lot. And in days, if we're lucky, the last time they had to do a recount in Virginia, it took until late December.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that to get anything done in the Senate, anything of any importance, it takes not 50 votes, but 60 votes. So whoever gets control of the chamber, they will get their guys in as the committee chairman. They will get their leadership structure in. But the fact is, nothing is going to be done without a lot of consensus between the two parties.
David Gergen, you've worked for a lot of Republicans, some Democrats too, and yet I hear you saying on this day of Republican defeat, a healthy day for democracy.
It is a healthy day for democracy. I think accountability is critical in our democracy. If we had had this environment in where a war has been mismanaged, a culture of corruption has been allowed to creep into Washington, and we've had the kind of overspending that has really antagonized so many conservatives. Had the Republicans pulled off and won both the House and the Senate, I think a lot of people in this country would have become extraordinarily cynical, that this is an impervious government. It does not respond to the will of the people.
Last night, Democrat Claire McCaskill, winner of the Missouri Senate race, and it was a close one, congratulated supporters there on that victory over incumbent GOP Senator Jim Talent.
Enjoy tonight. You deserve it. Because the Democratic Party once again has claimed Harry Truman's Senate seat for the working people of Missouri.
Lots of whooping and hollering around the country in Democratic quarters, something quite different in GOP quarters. David Gergen is with us, former advisor to presidents, you name it, right on back. Karen Tumulty is with us as well, national political correspondent for Time magazine. Karen, take us to that Missouri race. This is one of the very close ones, one that was critical. Of course, Ford didn't get it in Tennessee. McCaskill did in Missouri. How do you read what happened there?
Well, this is, I think I was watching this race more closely than any other, because this was one I really and truly could not figure out what the dynamic was. And this, I think Missouri probably more than any other state, was a real test of this much vaunted Republican turnout operation.
Mm-hmm.
They had a very, very good ground organization there. One of the things that drove it, however, was the fact that there was a stem cell ballot initiative on the ballot there. I think in some ways, Missouri was a little bit more insulated than most states from these big national pressures, and still the Democrat prevailed.
What does that say about the turnout machine, David Gergen? What does it say about the permanent majority that Karl Rove has often spoken of?
I think their dreams of a permanent majority have now died. Certainly this president is not going to leave behind a permanent Republican majority. They may build it at some later point. But it's very, very interesting times. The evangelical vote really softened on them this time. 41% of people who are evangelicals in the House exit polling across the nation said they voted Democratic. Now, many of them were liberal evangelicals.
Mm-hmm. But still, blow after blow, Mark Foley, Ted Haggard, and right on down the line.
39% of regular churchgoers voted Democratic this time. Those numbers were, very inflated numbers. Clearly, the values issues that moved so many voters in 2004, 2002, and indeed in 2000 played much less a role this time. Iraq and corruption and the economy played much more heavily.
That could mean a real change in chemistry. I want
Absolutely.
To hear from a Democrat, Congressman, victorious in Maryland's 8th District in yesterday's voting. Congressman Chris Van Hollen joins us from Kensington, Maryland, defeated. Republican challenger Jeff Stein will return for his third term in Congress. Congressman, thanks very much for being with us today.
It's good to be with you.
Big day for Democrats. How do you read the road signs put out in this midterm vote?
Well, I think the signs were clear, which was that the people around this country were fed up with the status quo in Washington. They were tired of business as usual, and they wanted a new change. They wanted a change in direction. I think they were tired of a Republican-dominated Congress that essentially had given the president a blank check, and they want people who will hold the Bush administration accountable and the Congress that will also hold itself accountable. The scandals that we've seen over the last many years where people have clearly put their personal financial interests over the public interests, I think played a major role. People just want to send a message. It's time to clean up Washington, hold the Bush administration accountable, and begin to embark, I think, on an agenda that helps middle-class families around the country.
Well, there's the question. A protest vote pretty clearly here against what's been seen in GOP Washington. But what do you read this vote as being for, Congressman Van Hollen, in terms of the Democrats' agenda? How much of it is the country ready to go with?
Well, again, I think it is a mix. I think it is partly a referendum on the Bush administration's failed policies and the rubber stamp Congress. But I also believe that people want this country to begin to move forward on some domestic issues. This Congress has really passed very little in the way of substantive bills in this past session. The Democrats have laid out agenda. We think it's an agenda that appeals to a broad cross-section of Americans. I'll just mention three of our 6 for 06 agenda. One is to repeal the subsidies for the oil and gas industry that were passed as part of the last two Bush administration energy bills. I don't think anybody believes that we should be shelling out taxpayer dollars for the oil and gas companies. We need to invest in renewable energy. That's one thing we intend to do. We intend to raise the minimum wage. I think people think it's scandalous that Congress has given itself a raise every year for the last 9 years, but we have not raised the minimum wage for working families around this country. We're going to restore the cuts that were made in the student loan program. We think we should make it easier, not harder, for students to go to college. So those are just three out of an agenda of a six, which I think appeals, again, to a broad cross-section of the American public. The Republican leadership has stymied every one of those efforts in the last couple of years.
And Congressman, let me ask you, if I may, about this accountability issue. There's been accountability at the polls, but what about in Congress? Is it payback time? Is it hearings time? How far do you think you and your fellow Democrats are going to go in sort of digging back into the history of the Iraq War scandal and the rest, and pushing that to the fore here?
Well, it's not payback time. One thing that's been made very clear, and Nancy Pelosi made this clear in her comments last night, is we look forward to working with the administration, the Republicans, in partnership. I think what you've seen in Washington, because you've had one-party monopoly control, is the president has essentially said, it's my way or the highway. He has not extended the hand of partnership. We hope to work with the president. We understand that the president will be in the White House for another 2 years. So we want to work with them. At the same time, we are going to ask the hard questions, both in terms of what's happened with respect to Iraq and national security issues, both to hold people accountable, but also to learn, I think, important lessons as we go forward in the many challenges we face. So I think what you'll see, actually, is this committee and committee chairman doing their job, playing their role that I think our founding fathers envisioned for them, and acting as a separate, independent branch of government rather than just an echo chamber for the White House.
Congressman Chris Van Hollen, victorious yesterday in Maryland's 8th District. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Karen Tumulty, how about it? A partnership with the Bush White House and the Republicans? Can you really see that happening?
Well, again, I think it depends on the issue. It's something that's going to happen, issue by issue. We've seen cases in which divided government has been a very productive time in American history. I mean, as recently as, the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton was able to get trade legislation through a Republican Congress. He was able to get welfare reform through with Republican votes and a big crime bill. This can happen. The question becomes whether, the two sides are just so used to fighting by now that they've forgotten how to do this.
Let's begin to listen to our listeners, the voters. Peter's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
As a Democrat, I was pleased, but as an American, I was even more pleased because I think this was a pushback towards the middle, the far right and far left may be more vocal, but not as numerous. So after Schwartz and Lieberman lost in the primaries, I was a little scared, but I think last night was a vote more towards the middle, and I hope I don't see a lot of end zone touchdown dancing by the Democrats, and I'm ready to see a more moderate Congress.
So there's a big smile, and we hear it. Peter, thanks for calling. David Gergen, how about this? The Republican conservatism thrust was the theme of this country's governance for many years now. And it began to crumble, and we've got, a move to the middle, let's say. But what does that mean in terms of a theme, direction, vision for the country? Are we just in a state of flux now, looking for what the new kind of bywords will be, or...
My sense is that this was a rejection of extremism, a rejection of scandal and incompetence, but it was not an embrace of a particular set of ideas or a particular thrust. I do think the caller's right about this being going to more to the middle, a sensible center, but what the real question for the Democrats is now, can they come up with an agenda that goes beyond the rather modest proposals about student loans that we just heard about and minimum wage, which are commendable
in and
of themselves.
But what's the big picture?
What are we doing about the mega issues about health care? healthcare reform? What are we doing about the mega issue of energy and climate change? The mega issue of the retirement of the baby boomers and the cost that's going to impose on Medicare and Social Security, and meeting the competitive threat from China and India. Those are the big issues, and you can't even get to those until you resolve Iraq. My sense is that if they can come together on Iraq, and the Democrats can find common ground with the president, and the president's willing to meet them halfway.
Will Jim Baker help them do that?
Or Jim Baker's prepared to do that.
Position the GOP for 2008.
Yeah, but as Karen will tell you, I think there's a lot of feeling in Washington that it's that the Baker Commission report is premised on the idea there's going to be a new Secretary of the Defense Department. I don't think the president is going to fire Don Rumsfeld. It does strike me that there's a rising possibility that Don Rumsfeld will fall on his own sword now, that over he will voluntarily resign,
time to go,
clear
maybe
the decks, allow the president more latitude to work with Baker and with Lee Hamilton. But I think we're going to be into a fascinating and possibly extremely contentious, because there are a lot of Democrats who felt the message out of yesterday was end the war, bring the troops home. That is certainly not the view of the president. That's certainly not the view of John McCain or Dick Cheney or a whole lot of other people. Can they find a sensible center on that issue?
Karen, we want to get your view on that, but if I may, just for a moment, first from Hickory, North Carolina, we're joined by Congressman Patrick McHenry, Republican, North Carolina's 10th District, stretching from the Blue Ridge Mountains down to the South Carolina border. Last night, he defeated Democrat Richard Karsner to win a second term in Congress. Congressman McHenry, congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tom.
You won. Your party didn't, at least in the House. We'll wait and see what happens in the Senate. How do you interpret this big midterm vote, Congressman?
Well, look, there are a number of confusing things out there on the national landscape. First of all, let me concede it's been a tough night for Republicans. It's been a tough 2 years to be a Republican with so many of the hot issues going on in Washington and nationally. We lost somewhere around 29 seats by my count right now. We have the possibility of picking up two new Republicans in Georgia. There are a lot of confusing things out there.
What's confusing about that result? That's a pretty resounding defeat, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, on the surface level, it's certainly a great triumph, a very large win for the Democrats, yes. But if you look at the CNN poll of just 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, a majority of the American people believe that government is doing too much and is too large.
And Republicans helped make it that way, right?
Well, that's part of the issue. The second thing is that 7 of the 8 states that had an anti-homosexual marriage ballot initiative passed it. So on a night when Democrats have put Nancy Pelosi in the Speaker's chair, and the American people have voted in a larger number of Democrats to Congress and to the Senate, you have these two conflicting issues.
So do you think the Republican Revolution, Congressman, is dead or just in hibernation?
Well, I think that is at issue. I think the issue is that we have not spoken truly to the American people on the spirit of 94, on limiting government, on actually acting like Republicans. And I would say that, we haven't given the American people enough in the way of results, and they've punished us for that. Clearly, this was a statement more about Republican leadership than about Democrat leadership. I would say that the election spoke more to the president and a Republican leadership in Congress and wanted to punish us than it was a compliment or a reassuring message to Pelosi and Hoyer and Rahm Emanuel.
Are you personally ready to reach out in partnership and work with Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and company?
Well, if we can work in the right direction, I think that is what we should do. The issue I have with just blindly compromising is that I have a philosophy of government that I want to move things to be smaller government. Well, when people in my party go off the reservation, and you have the Democrats largely off that belief system as well.
Well, they had a surplus when Clinton's time ended.
Yes, and the reason is he was not able to pass the spending initiatives that he had in 92 and 93 and 94. And 94 changed all that for him. What I would tell you is the deficit today is as a direct result of us being attacked at 9/11 and the president's choice to go to war in Iraq. It's the department.
Was that a mistake? Was that choice a mistake, Congressman McHenry?
Look, I wasn't in Congress.
But was it a mistake on the president's part?
I'll tell you, the punishment on this election has a lot to do with Iraq. It also has a lot to do with spending in Washington and scandals. What I would tell you is that there were a number of paper cuts that actually created a hemorrhage in this election. And a number of
Iraq's
things,
a paper cut?
Well, I would tell you in terms of the election results mm-hmm. in these 29 districts where Republicans lost and Democrats won, it was one of the many things that voters thought about on election day. Certainly the economy and jobs, that was foremost in people's minds. And also the number two issue would be Iraq, and that's due to national polling and district-by-district polling. So Iraq was not the number one issue in this election.
Maybe not in your district, and we congratulate you on your victory there. And we can hear you still in there swinging, Congressman Patrick McHenry, in North Carolina's 10th. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Karen Tumulty, is that the voice of Republicans ready to work across the aisle?
It certainly didn't sound like it. Again, I think that as a result, we're going to have to really look at this. I'm sounding like a broken record here, but issue by issue, because I'm not at all sure that the president is going to feel that way either. He certainly, there have been people around him over the last few weeks who have reminded us the way he worked in Texas and how he was actually very, very good at bringing Democrats around to his way of thinking and bending to theirs. But I just really haven't seen much by way of signs of that.
Karen, I know we have to let you go in a second here. What should we watch for in these two remaining Senate races, George Allen versus Webb and out in Montana, Tester and Burns?
Well, at this point, it's just, watch how they count the votes on this one. And also remember, too, that when Webb and Tester get to the Senate, they are coming to the Senate in part because they are so conservative. And so this, in both houses, we're going to have very fractious caucuses among the Democrats, and it's not always going to be that easy for them to unite either.
And the 08 campaign, when does that begin, Karen?
I think it started about midnight last night.
Well, Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time magazine. Chris is calling from Fredericksburg, Virginia. Hi, Chris.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I would like to just point out this is Fredericksburg, Virginia, and not as it sometimes gets confused, Frederick, Maryland. Uh-huh. And that's part of my point. but what I'd like to say is you can blame a lot of things various to the Abramowitz and the Foley and all these other things, but the 900-pound gorilla in the room remains Iraq. And my point being that I wanted to stipulate that I'm Virginia is that our Senator George Allen should have taken this very, very easily. He was pro-Bush, he was pro-war, and Jim Webb, who ran a very weak campaign, didn't have much money, is now one-third of 1% ahead of George Allen, and Virginia is a very, very heavily military state. We have Quantico. We have the Norfolk Navy Yard.
And, of course, Webb was former Navy Secretary for Ronald Reagan. What's your party, and how did you vote, Chris?
I was a Republican, and I voted for Webb.
So you crossed the line because of Iraq?
Yes, and many other people did, too. I'm not alone in that.
No.
That is the 900-pound gorilla.
And what do you want done in Iraq?
Well, I'd like to see them slowly phase out withdrawal, set some benchmarks. Obviously, you can't cut and run. As I think one of your pundits on another show put it very well, George Bush drove a bus into a cul-de-sac, and now he's asking everybody how to get that bus out. Well, I hope the Democrats can figure out a way to do it. It's got to be a phased time withdrawal. That's all there is to it.
There's crossed fingers and a big hope, and still no final outcome in Virginia on that Senate race. Let's get the view, David Gergen, if we may, here of some what a lot of voters thought on the way out of the polls yesterday. Right now from New York, we're joined by Kathleen Frankovic. She's CBS News Director of Surveys, looking at those exit polls. Kathleen, thanks a lot for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
Give us the top of your findings. I mean, you had a lot of things to ask voters beyond the simple vote for candidates. What's most important in what you learned?
That's correct. I think it's very important to note one thing, and that is that this was a nationalized election. When voters were asked to tell us whether their vote for U.S. House of Representatives, the one house we know has flipped to the Democrats, what mattered more to them, local issues or national issues, the answer was national issues from 60%. And this helped the Democrats, and of course the national issue that was on many people's minds, among others, the national issue was Iraq, and there the voters were expressing concern, dismay, and I would say quite a bit of worry.
And what else? What did you see that might tell us how what the voters may support going forward?
Well, that's interesting because I'm not sure that it's very clear what voters would support. When it comes to Iraq, there is a clear thing, however. On that question, voters would very much want to see U.S. troop levels there at least reduced, if not withdrawn. More than a majority would like to see the U.S. start reducing troop levels there. So that seems to be a consensus.
And pretty clear with a lot of impact. David Gergen, you've been looking at this question of sort of faith in the future among voters.
Yes, I'd be interested in hearing Ms. Markovic, who is a real pro on these questions. I was quite struck, I think, by one of the numbers that came out, that some 41% of voters, or 40%, thought that life would not be as good for the next generation as it is for their own.
You know, there's sort of a history of poll questions, and that sort of pessimism has kind of existed now for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Even after 9/11, if you were to ask people that question, they would be optimistic about the future. You know, things will get better. Case now, we've been seeing polls now really for most of this year, and to see it generalized to term expectation, not just things are bad or the country's on the wrong track, headed in the wrong direction, but to see it generalized to the future is, I think, a very important point.
Yeah, we saw this back with Jimmy Carter. You remember that whole issue with Pat Caddell and malaise and all the rest of it?
We picked it up on occasion since then. Jimmy Carter's not the only president to have had moments of malaise.
Yeah, but it's striking that it's back in such a strong force.
Kathleen Frankovic in New York, we're having a little trouble with your line, but we appreciate you being with us. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Let's take a call from Hartford, Connecticut. Nitza is on the line. Hi, Nitza. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just have a question. Maybe they can answer two questions. One is, now that Lieberman won and he's not a Democrat,
he's an independent. He says he'll caucus with the Democrats, but he is an independent. Yeah.
Yes, but how do they see power shifting? And also, will the Democrats take the immigration reform back now that they won the House?
David Gergen, great questions both here. Let's look at Joe Lieberman. Big challenge from Ned Lamont in the primaries. He lost there, came back out as an independent, and won it quite handily with a lot of Republican votes. This is a man, given how close everything is, who's going to have enormous power in this Senate.
He will have power. I'm not sure he'll have enormous power. He's going to be in an odd position within his own caucus now. He will caucus with them, and of course, his vote is going to be crucial if in fact, the Democrats do continue to lead and win in Montana and Virginia.
But does he become a one-man swing vote here?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I actually think that on questions like Iraq, there are going to be other Republican senators like John Warner. Olympia Snow said yesterday, we've got to change on Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
John Warner's been saying we've got to change on Iraq. It's the White House, which is really the one that's standing in the way right now, and the vice president and the president are very defiant on that issue.
Are you putting Joe Lieberman still in their camp so he won't be the swing vote?
I think that Joe Lieberman would probably join a group like Warner and see if there's some way to come to a better resolution of this. But here's, Tom, essentially with this election over, stay the course. The course we're on in Iraq is not working. So everybody knows we've got to change the course.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, there were two basic options. Dick Holbrook and others have been arguing that either we escalate or we start to disengage in a serious way. Had the Republicans won, I think we would have escalated. I think there would have been a request for more troops in Baghdad. I think the president would have felt vindicated.
John McCain has called
for
that.
And John McCain's been in that corner. I think the president would have fought it out. Having now lost the House and probably the Senate, it strikes me that the president is going to be under enormous pressure to embrace the disengagement policy, but he's not going to want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that becomes the conflict, because I think he really, truly believes that victory is possible. And there are a lot of of other people who believe, let's just figure out the best way we can to get out of this. We're not going to get a democracy there. We're not going to get an ultimate victory. Let's do the best we can.
Jim Baker likely to redefine victory for the president.
I agree,
but the question is whether George W., George Jr., will be able to embrace the...
Well, that's exactly right. And remember where Baker's coming from. He never wanted to go in to start with. He thought it was a mistake to go in to start with.
His Gulf War with Poppy was a very different affair.
Very different. So we've got some really hard things. But to not lose sight of the caller's other question about immigration, I do think that the House Democrats now will push for an immigration bill, which will be very quite similar to what John McCain and Ted Kennedy and George W. Bush have been pushing for. And that is, yes, we want to be tougher on the borders, but we also must, in the same breath, address the issue of illegal immigrants who are here. What is the humane, compassionate, and fair, just way to deal with them?
But let me ask you about that. Here we get right into the 08 presidential campaign.
Right.
There was a huge pushback when sitting President Bush wanted to push forward with this kind of liberalizing immigration legislation with Republicans with an eye on 08, knowing what an iceberg that can be for them with their base. Are they going to be prepared to play along with their own president here looking forward?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the people who lost in this race was J.D. Hayworth in Arizona, the Republican who has been a staunch, seal the damn borders and forget everything else. He went down yesterday in Arizona. There is a push in places in the Southwest, especially among the Hispanic population, that just sealing the borders is not an appropriate answer, that it must be more comprehensive, and they want some things done. And I think you're going to see, with the Republicans now recognizing that running narrowly on a more extreme conservative position is no longer viable as a way to govern the country, that you must reach out more to the center. And you must get beyond your really conservative base to get more of the moderates. If I can just make one more point, I don't mean to extend this. The person, Matthew Dowd, the Republican strategist who was the one who discovered the importance of the base strategy and convinced Karl Rove that was the way to go, has been arguing for the last several months the base strategy itself may be becoming obsolete because there is a growing number of people in the middle in both parties who are disenchanted with the extremes in their own parties, and those voices will be heard. I think they were heard in this election. And I think those voices are saying, let's come up with sensible answers. Let's not just have ideological answers, whether it's Iraq or immigration or a whole host of other issues.
And if that happens, that really would change the dynamic.
Absolutely.
We have seemed stuck in, locked in for years now. Let me take a call from Iowa City, Iowa. Linda's on the line. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi. One of the things that concerns me is this sort of easy overgeneralization of people's positions. I don't see evidence that the Democrats newly elected are conservative on social issues even. I think they're populist. One of your guests talked about Jim Webb as being very conservative. He's not. He supports a woman's right to choose. He's opposed to an amendment to ban gay marriage. He's a moderate on social issues. And he talked a lot about things like minimum wage. Heath Shuler, who came in, is again was seen as a conservative, but he's really a populist. He talked about getting jobs, the minimum wage, again, pocketbook, populist issues for the middle class and the working class.
Linda, let us pick that up. Our time is short, but David Gergen, populism itself kind of in flux here, what it means these days, whether moderation is now the populist position or something else. Linda says these aren't conservatives, but what I'm hearing the word attached is moderate.
I think there are some moderate populists. Sherrod Brown, who won the Senate seat in Ohio, John Tester, who probably is going to win the Senate seat now in Montana. I think there are indeed populists, but there are people now who come into this who were elected this time who are socially conservative. Bob Casey, who won a runaway smashing victory in Pennsylvania.
Rick Santorum out.
It was Rick Santorum out. He is pro-life, and he was recruited by Chuck Schumer, who is pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
They muscled out of the race a woman who was a pro-choice Democrat, might well have lost the election. They muscled her out and got Bobby Casey in there, and now he's coming in a pro-life position. I think, frankly, to go back to Karen Tumulty's point earlier, there's going to be some fractious conversations within each caucus, too. Each party's going to have... The Republicans are going to have their conservative wing. It'll be mostly conservative in the Republican Party, but some sensible people are going to say, wait a minute, we've got to have a bigger tent. And the Democrats are going to have these very liberal chairs in the
ascending
House.
Ascending back to the committee chairs now.
Going back to committee chairs, but they know that these new, more centrist, more moderate people have been elected, and they want to preserve those seats. After all, those were Republican seats that were picked up,
yeah.
And they could go back to being Republican seats if they mismanage this as Democrats in the next 2 years.
Dandy territory to hang on to if they can. I want to turn for a moment here for a look ahead to Des Moines, Iowa, and David Yepsen, columnist at the Des Moines Register. This is turf where the 08 election rises earliest. The sun comes up. David Yepsen, what do you see in these midterm results for the chemistry of the presidential campaign?
Well, I think in Iowa there is a debate that's already started among, particularly among Republicans, about just what should this party stand for. They did take a beating yesterday. They are now asking themselves, what do we have to do to get back to a winning game? It's not unlike the discussion that Democrats went through 2 years ago. And already, you know, I've heard Republicans saying, you know, we've got to quit being a wholly owned subsidiary of the religious right. Even in South Dakota, which is a pretty conservative place, voters yesterday rejected that state's very strict ban on abortion. So Republicans need to, or some Republicans are thinking about moving back to the center. And I think that that will be a debate that goes on in this state in the coming year, as these presidential candidates crisscross the state looking for help. How do you find a candidate who can appeal to this Republican base without alienating the other two-thirds of the American electorate?
So is there a base in the center for the Republicans at this point, after all these years of placing that base out on the wing, the right wing?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure that, they're going to have to do some work. I mean, clearly a candidate like Rudy Giuliani or Governor George Pataki would have some appeal to more moderate centrist American voters, but that's going to be a debate inside the Republican Party. They're going to have to go to candidates are going to have to go to rank and file activists and say, here's why I'm electable, here's why I can win. And while we might disagree on this issue or that issue, I have a position on issues that can win in a general election, and that's what's important.
David Gergen, you said a big day for accountability, looking backward, looking forward to 08. What do you see unfolding in these numbers?
Well, I'm just really intensely interested in Dave Jepson's view from Iowa about how this affects the Democrats as they look forward, looking for a candidate. Hillary Clinton won big yesterday.
Mm-hmm. In New York.
In New York, but she's also seen as representing the classic liberalism of the Democratic mm-hmm. Party. Barack Obama's this hot new rock star who is being speaking sort of more centrist values. Where do we find the Democrats, David, in Iowa?
I think Democrats are very intrigued by Barack Obama. He had just incredible crowds in the appearances he made here. He's fresh. He's new. I think there is some concern about Senator Clinton. Many of them like her. Some of the liberals are not happy with her because of her position on the war. But the concern you have among a lot of rank-and-file Democrats is that Senator Clinton would simply take us back to the past. We'd be having a discussion about ethics and all the troubles in Clinton's presidency. If I have one sense about Democrats, it's that they want to move on, too. They're interested now. They see a way that they can maybe take back the White House in 08. And so electability is going to be an issue there on the Democratic side as well.
And where does John McCain stand after this?
Well, a lot of Republicans, he's an example of a guy who can do well in a general election, who's going to have to come out to a Republican electorate, caucus goers who are pretty conservative and say, look, you know, I may not be with you 100% on all your social issues, but I can win in a general election. I mean, I think there's going to be a real discussion about political pragmatism in both parties.
And a move on message umbrellaed right over both of those, maybe. David Yepsen at the Des Moines Register in Iowa. David, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
David Gergen, a final thought on this big vote.
Historic day, a potentially historic day, certainly dramatic. I think the voters of this country have done something very healthy, and that is when people abuse power, they pay a price. And that is something that is a clear message, not just for this generation of politicians, but for generations to come. I think it's very healthy.
And there we are, out of the midterms. David Gergen at Harvard, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.